Director Banks. Director Dodson.
Here.
Chair Wolf. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. The next item of business is public comments. Seeing none, we'll move on. Under Chair's comments, we have approval of the Customer Service Committee meeting minutes from the January meeting. We are going to defer that to the May meeting of the committee for review and consideration. Just under additional items, I would just like to make an announcement that there has been some discussion about committee structures and that would impact this committee, and we're going to engage in a discussion on that at the full board meeting next week, a week from today. That being said, we'll move on to the executive director portion of the agenda, and I'll turn it over to Christy.
Thank you very much, Chair Rennick. My job here today is really to introduce Shauna Whitehead, who's going to be going through the work plan, but also picking up on some of the discussion items that we have on today's agenda. Chief among those that I think we're looking for some input on is what to do about our transponder customer service for the Rockford area.
Yay.
Yes. So it's coming time to think about maybe a new partnership or new agreement there. We wanted to get some feedback from the committee about what some of the policy level type things we need to think about, or market penetration issues that we need to tackle there should be. So I'll turn it over to Shauna to go through the work plan, but also get us involved in some of those very important discussions.
Excellent. Good afternoon.
Hello. Good afternoon.
I am pleased to be here today to cover really four main areas. The first will be the Rockford discussion, and then I'll want to provide some updates on some of the previous conversations we had around fleet and our new back office system, and then we will ultimately talk about our settlement guidelines, which will require a vote as they are due to expire in the next few months. But to start out, we wanted to talk about the Rockford area, and we wanted to give an overview of our customer service operations in that area, or near that area, I should say, today for the most part, and talk a little bit in this committee about what we might be able to do tomorrow so that we can take your direction and try to perhaps improve upon what we have. Right now, our drivers who live in the Rockford area have several options. The Belvedere Oasis is the oasis where customer service is provided in person. That is the closest to where the Rockford area customers would drive. All the services are provided. People can walk to the counter and conduct business as any type of customer service business they need. Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., like all of our other oases, and about 75 customers come every day to do a whole variety of things. Many of them come with a whole, you know, whole list of things they need to do, and then it's like a long customer service process. Jewel Osco Transponder does transponder sales and transponder replacements. That's not full service customer service. That's just if you want to buy a new transponder, or if you have received a request to swap out your old transponder and replace it with a new one because the battery is expiring, you can go there. So at present, we have 172 Jewel Osco locations in northern Illinois. Every week we do about 3,000 new transponder sales, about 10,000 transponder replacements, about 2,500 gift card sales. But the nearest Rockford locations are about 35 to 45 miles away from the Rockford area. We have an agreement with Road Ranger, which does have several locations in the Rockford area, but their services have been limited to transponder sales. Now, all of this has been in operation for a number of years, and it's time to think more creatively and more expansively. So we would like to talk a little bit about what this committee might see as the future direction.
So one of the things that when she says that our agreement is up with Road Ranger, what we had to go through for the Chicagoland area was an RFP process, right?
Yes, for the Jewel Osco.
For the Jewel Osco agreement. Now, it happened that Jewel Osco was selected again. They are a previous provider, so there was some nice consistency there. But some of the things that I think we'd like to think about are ideas about how we do the right outreach, given that, you know, the Jewel Oscars of the world, the Road Rangers of the world, other entities like that, maybe don't, they aren't used to responding to government RFPs. You know, they don't, they're not registered on the procurement bulletin for any given area. So, you know, what type of outreach do we need to do? Of course, always being in compliance with any procurement laws, but any groups that we could reach out to, chambers or other things, to make sure that the right entities know about the opportunity, and what type of coverage do we want to see? Do we want one key partnership? What's the benefit of having one versus multiple entities? Those are, the, I think, some of the types of questions.
Well,
I guess my first question would be, the Road Ranger contract expires when? When exactly does that expire?
It expires this year. I can get you the exact date. It was not structured like, because it was so old, it predates our current contract structures. So it has.
So at the end of this year, basically, yeah, that agreement is up. So we do need to start an RFP process.
Okay. Are they aware of that they may or may not be providing that service? How does that work? They
mostly
know?
Interact with us through our service provider Igor, which does the shipping and the delivery of the transponders.
But have they been? So one point is, and maybe they'll
we've
know now. But should we? I mean, it sounds like we should proactively notify them. Certainly,
reach out,
we haven't,
talk to them,
and
sure,
make sure that they know. You know, this is coming to an end toward the end of this year. We're going to be doing this RFP process and.
The only reason I mention that is because I do know the owners are local,
uh-huh,
folks, and so that's, you know, you want to certainly make sure that they...
They did engage in the contract process initially, and this was a term of the contract, so, I mean, whether or not it's
but
on
they
the
didn't,
front
I,
burner,
I don't think that they went through, when they established these partnerships, I'm not sure they went through kind of a formal RFP process. Now, we need to go through more formal contract process. So, I don't think it was the same type of procurement process that people are used to now with the state.
But I'm just saying, as it relates to,
yeah,
the end date of that contract, I mean, they would have been made aware of that.
Could,
yeah,
be a dim memory, depending
it could
on
be a dim
how
memory.
Formal
could
the
be,
process.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so they'll know that. I guess then the other thing, when you mentioned, Christy, about, I guess, what would be ideal in terms of a model, you mentioned a singular entity or type of the Jewel Oscar. Is there kind of like a best practice or something? Is there a preference that the tollway prefers?
The Jewel Oscar has been very helpful from a branding and communications perspective. So there is
the benefit of having one partner.
That is the benefit, yeah,
of having one partner, is that you can very easily, clearly tell people this is where you go. There's no confusion, and you know we do have, you know, some advertising that we use for transponders. You know, we get it for free to allow the media outlets access to our cameras. We get free advertising. We use that to advertise where people go to get transponders. But, you know, maybe there's a benefit to not. This was, I think we did have this question with this committee when we started planning for the renewal of the Greater Chicagoland Area Agreement. So I thought we wanted to talk again about whether, you know, do we think it should be something that what's the benefit to having one exclusive partner? Are there groups that have enough penetration in Rockford to provide good coverage to that whole market versus, you know, is that not so much the case?
Could I just ask a question? Do we see a higher use of online service provision in the area where we don't have the physical coverage? Is the absence of having a Jewel OSCO driving people to use the web and the internet connection?
Yes. The people who live far away from our in-person customer service locations, including the Jewel OSCOs, do typically, and this includes people on both coasts, because we have, you know, we have customers that stretch coast to coast. They do more online and more on the phone, and we do more mail by them as well.
And do we survey our customers frequently enough to know whether that's satisfactory and things are going okay? I guess I'm going back to the preliminary question of how much in-person, on-the-ground, physical location do people need and want? Do they tend to be more satisfied with that than something else? And, you know, because that sort of drives the whole question of how we think about our service provision to our customers.
The last survey we did, I feel, was a few months back. We talked about it here, and most people did go online, and they did express that they could do most things online. But
the thing is, and this has been pointed out before, I mean, in order to keep the cost down on our surveying, we use, you know, kind of a SurveyMonkey tool,
yes,
which is an online tool. So, you know, we don't engage in, you know, market survey that would get at those people who aren't as comfortable using online. So you are kind of self-selecting your online customer.
And do we know by zip code, for example, the people who are in the Rockford area who might not have proximity to a service center, who are traveling a distance to go to the other places as opposed to going online?
We don't have a great way to know who's coming in from that area for in-person service. I mean, because of the way our system tracks transactions, that's hard to do. But we do know that Belvedere, which is the closest option, they have about 75 customers a day. And there are a number of people that we have seen at least write in on surveys. They say, I do most things online. However, when I have something complex or I have a lot of things to do, I sometimes prefer to come in.
But this wouldn't, even
this
our
wouldn't
tool partnership isn't a full customer service where they would come in for a violation. Or this is a transponder
distribution question,
really.
Right.
Yeah.
What would be your timeline for putting out the RFP? When you see it?
It would have to be this year.
It would have to be the next couple of months, I think, because there's the whole process in that an RFP process, simple versus complex, can be 6 months to a year. So we really need to get going and get something
started. So you anticipate over the next couple of months of probably putting something out there?
Yep, we'd like to. Is there anything we should do first, though? Would you like some surveying? I mean, again, it would be a SurveyMonkey type tool, so you would be kind of self-selecting that group that has provided an email address or, you know, is more comfortable using emailed or online survey.
I'm going to kind of go back to when we were going through this at the Jewel, and forgive me because I'm relying on my memory, because it seemed like we kind of went through part of this discussion about how important this was for us to have this partnership. And I tend to recall that without having any definitive numbers to throw out there, that based on what we were getting back, the feedback that we were getting back from customers was that they did feel that partnership was a plus and provided a convenience to them that allowed them. And this was particularly in light of the time that we were engaged in a large number of transactions and switching over those transponders. So it was very helpful from making it more convenient and local to those people, and also convenient for us not to have everybody running here. Because as I understand, the alternative is you can go do it, but you have to do it through the mail, which involves you have to rid yourself of a transponder and wait until it comes back. And for the purposes of traveling, I think that creates hardship.
Driving to Belvedere, right?
So with that being said, you know, I do think that, you know, my initial thought here is I think there's a value to us to having a partner. And as I explained to Director Dodson, begged for his forgiveness, I didn't realize that there wasn't, you know, this large Jewel presence in the Rockford area and that there were these issues. I think that, you know, as we talked about this, and I think it was presented as what is the ideal model, I think really as we go through this RFP process, we'd be well served if we could reach out to the Chambers of Commerce and transportation groups to let them know that we're engaging in this. And if we can find a single provider, somebody where we can do the same type of branding, I think there's a real benefit to both parties when that happens. But I'm just guessing. I don't know if that's going to be out there.
Oh, go ahead.
But I think as we reach out, you know, if we can do it and find a provider where it's more accessible, more neighborhood, I think it makes it easier. And, you know, at least from my standpoint, I think that's good for us.
Do we think it's important that we find, you know, it seems like one criteria maybe in the solicitation and one question we have is it just getting the transponder or is it kind of the full array of transponder related services? We understand nobody's going to handle the violation notice process or others, but swapping out, as well as just selling the other services.
Yeah, I agree. I tend to like the, you know, the food store model. The one that comes to mind, I mean, we have a Schnucks. Anybody heard of Schnucks?
Oh, yeah. I like
Schnucks. Schnucks is a Schnucks. So there is a Schnucks in our area that would be ideal in my world. I mean, that would be the ideal place because they have locations throughout the greater Rockford area that would be convenient for the greatest number of people. So,
some entity, whether it's that or other, that has locations throughout the greater Rockford area, so we'd want to draft into the RFP, as much as we did with the Chicagoland one, something that is really coverage throughout Rockford.
Absolutely.
Demonstrated. We'll have to figure out some way of quantifying that.
Because mm-hmm. Right, I don't think there are any governmental agencies that would foot the bill, whether it's a driver's license facility or any other state agency. I mean, there's several buildings here, but it wouldn't be convenient for the greatest number of people. So I do like
okay.
Private businesses like the idea because it brings people through their doors.
Right. That was the other thing. Just clarification on that. I've been told this many. I just want to make sure that in the RFP, that's kind of the stated benefit is, you know, it's to increase traffic.
Right.
Sure.
And from our perspective, having one entity is by far preferable, or is that absolute that it should only be one entity? I'm speaking on behalf of my husband who comes from Hanover, Illinois, which is up near Galena, and my guess is the greater Rockford area may not think of itself as including Hanover, but there are places that are even further away than Rockford.
The RFP that we put out last time did not preclude multiple partners. That was explicitly stated. But Jewel Osco came with enough locations that
it made sense.
So should we be looking at something beyond Rockford, though? So we've got, you know, Rockford, but is there something in an ideal world would we maybe have something that did go beyond the, you know, Rockford proper?
When we made the decision about Jewel Osco, did we have in mind our customers? Excuse me, would be an X number of miles driving distance of a location, and if we applied that same criteria to this, if we say there's a whole pocket over here that we need to think about differently.
We asked about number of locations, and we asked them to kind of plot them on a map and to show the county, to tell us how many would be in each county, so roughly. We would ask the same questions, and or we could be more specific.
But I think, and forgive me, but I think what the chairman's asking is, did we say we're looking for somebody that would meet this geographic area and everybody would be within 12-mile radius of every single one of your stores?
We did not.
Because
I don't know enough about the geography of this area and how Schnucks or Sullivan's or anybody is distributed around there, but in just thinking about whether we're doing one or more than one, we might have in our own minds that we want people within X number of miles of something, so that when we put out an RFP, we explain to people that's what we're looking for and that it isn't necessarily contingent on being able to serve everybody within that geographic area, but within the region that one is in. Do you have enough locations within X number of miles? And maybe that gets too complicated. That's why I was asking this problem for you.
The reason we didn't include it last time had to do with, I think, discussion we had at the time regarding the difficulty that some of these organizations have responding to state procurements.
Yeah.
But I think there might be ways to include that sort of question but not make it one that has a huge thing to score or whatever.
Is an automatic disqualifier or something, but just a preference that we have.
Right.
And as I understand, when we draft these, we can put down the criteria that we're talking about as close preferences and allow each responder to provide their own narrative as to how they would comply or best be suited for that, right?
Well, the last thing I'll say is thank you. I'm willing to help, whatever you need me to do. I have a certain list of contacts in the area, and I would be more than happy to help spread the word. I'll even go door to door if I, I'll go visit Schnucks personally if I need to, but I'm willing to help, so.
And you have no financial interest in it.
I think it would be great for the people there in the area, so.
To have something with a little more.
Based on the fact that you called it Schnucks at the beginning, I don't think he does.
It feels as if you have a very potent transportation coalition out there, and I think it would be great if maybe we could engage them and the chamber and other groups as partners in this, so that we have a group of people who know that it will benefit the transportation system and the economic development system, and can they help us think through how to do this? And maybe before we even do the RFP, sit down with some of the affiliate groups and say, help us think about this.
Good.
Sounds good.
You would have done that anyway, I know.
No, not necessarily. I think that's a good idea. Thank you.
Okay, I think I have a good list to get started. Action item. I don't know if there are any further thoughts or comments on this topic at this point. Then I will probably be reaching out to talk a little bit about outreach and make sure we follow up and position ourselves as best we can for a good number of responses. Okay. We wanted to update you on the discussion that we had last time regarding fleet. Last time, just to remind ourselves what we consider fleet, we had talked about how a fleet account is a commercial account with 10 or more license plates. That's how we choose to define it. And we had been asked last time approximately how many fleet customers we have or how we serve them, and whether or not it would be possible to give them their own special customer service, where if they called in, they could be funneled to our more experienced customer service representatives who could give them more time, more experience, and possibly even go back and forth with them on email as needed, because oftentimes it's a series of iterative calls with them versus just a family that's calling in with an address change or one plate to add or whatever it might be. So here we see on the screen and on your computers that in our estimates, we get about 20 walk-in fleet customers every day and about 70 callers every day. But that on average, these fleet customer service transactions are at least twice as long as any of our other ones. So even though most of our drivers are passenger car family type drivers, our fleet customers are the ones that have the most complex needs. So here at the bottom of the screen, at the bottom of the slide, we're introducing our plans for 2014. You know, if you have any questions or thoughts or ideas that you want us to try, let us know. But we want to introduce a dedicated fleet team at our call center, and we want to expand the capacity of our call center reps to interact with the fleet customers by email. And then just kind of as a different path, we had talked a little bit about intermediaries last time, Best Pass, Plate Pass, organizations that are third parties that are a customer to us, but then they get all the license plates, they get all the transponders, and they manage a whole group of customers, truckers, rental car fleets, whatever it might be. And how that actually, they aggregate services in a way that is very beneficial to us. And we thought the introduction of some settlement guidelines, which is actually very timely, and we'll talk about those in a little bit, that gave more consideration to the intermediaries would make sense as well. So those would be kind of our three big fleet items, initiatives, that we could really talk about and feel and work through in 2014. And we're very excited. Our new call center, this would not have been possible in our old call center space. Our old call center space in Lyle was extremely cramped. The technology was very outdated. And now that we're in the new UIC space, and now that we're working with Lighthouse, we're seeing, you know, far faster response times. We're seeing the capacity to kind of staff up and staff down, to expand and contract with all the call volume fluctuations that we see in any given week or over a different, you know, different seasons. So to me, this is very exciting to even be able to say, oh yes, let's give this a try. Because a year ago, it wouldn't have been feasible to even think about.
Molly, just a quick question.
Go
on. On that third one, you say introduction of improved settlement guidelines.
We're going to talk about that a little bit later, but the idea was to directly address the question of intermediaries that came up last time.
Okay.
So those intermediaries like FastPass that have thousands and thousands of plates, but they consolidate customer service for us. We don't have to talk to thousands of customers. We have them, and then they talk to their customers. So we'll talk a little bit about those too. But
maybe I'm not supposed to raise this, but I think when we put online the stop loss, there were a lot that were, I don't know if they're actually fleets, but
they're commercial. Correct. So they're commercial accounts.
Okay. So what would the impact of this be on our collections of violations?
I would like to think that if the fleets had better customer service, and as we get a fleet group up and running and we even find ways to be more proactive about outreach, that you wouldn't find as many fleet groups in the hole that actually leads to litigation.
Okay.
That would be my hope.
Great.
I think that what we're doing, the plan the way Shauna kind of has laid it out, and I think some of these things and these changes hopefully that we can implement in this coming year, I think we definitely give these commercial vendors in particular the tools that they need in order to remain in compliance and to more easily and more effectively handle their fleets. Some of those, I think, irrespective, may not have taken advantage of whatever opportunities were out there based on what I saw. But I agree that I think we're moving in the right direction so that there's less surprise. Shauna, my question is, with the understanding that we're taking a look at the settlement guidelines today, this plan for 2014, as we have the dedicated service, we expand our email use, what kind of a time frame would you be looking at to be fully implemented with those entities, if we can move forward with the guidelines?
I believe we could do it. We'll certainly do it by the end of 2014, probably much sooner. Oddly enough, the parameter that most defines the timeline is the capacity of UIC to get the electricians in to do the wiring, because we have to, for compliance reasons with our credit card guidelines, our PCI guidelines, we have to move this group into a different room at the call center. But that UIC has already been in very close contact with us, and barring catastrophe, they'll just work with us over the next couple of months, get this up and running.
Great.
And we've already identified the people in the call center who would be best equipped to move into these roles.
But it's a little higher level.
It is. They would be the more senior people. They would be the ones who take escalating calls already. And then what we'll do, because it is somewhat new territory for us, what we'll do is we'll set it up and we'll provide the service, but we'll meet with them every single week to kind of figure out what the experiences are, what the feedback is, and then try to tweak around it so that over time we really do establish a group that is uniquely positioned to assist.
You may have said this already, so I apologize if I missed it, but do you want to talk a little bit about how we're planning, once we are up and running, to advertise, maybe the wrong word, but at least promote that this is something that's available?
That's a great question, and it's one that we probably could get a little bit of feedback on. But we know who the fleets are, and for the most part, we can simply just email them and let them know there's this new option. Sometimes we get bounced back emails, and we could probably, you know, follow up with a phone call or whatever it might be. We'll definitely put in the newsletter. We'll put it on our website. But if there are other avenues that anybody can think of, let me know.
Well, I think that makes sense. I think that's the best information that we have available to us as our customer base. Although I think that using the same things that we're talking about in the Rockford area, using the business groups, the groups that handle the, you know, the trucking industry, the car rental industry, the, you know, the people that we've had these issues with, I mean, they'll be made available. That information will be made available to them, you know, and they'll know about that. You know, other than putting it out there to local chambers and businesses, I think just going through our...
The associations and that, right? Okay.
But it sounds like
going through the association.
Sounds like you feel pretty confident. You have a good handle on our customers. You know, this is a great place to start.
Mm-hmm. I'll be very interested to see, though, to the chair's point, whether certainly most of our fleet customers are good customers. We know for them all the time, and this would be a wonderful benefit to them immediately. But some of the outliers that have ended up in litigation, for instance, I'll be very curious to see if we're able to bring them into the fold over time.
We should reach out to the courts. Okay. Are there any other questions or comments on this issue? Okay.
But, I mean, I know you said that a little facetiously, but I would think in our administrative process, we would make sure that the administrative judges, the people who are hearing these appeals, make it clear there is another way to do this that might be better for you, and then maybe keep track of it so that if people continue to have violations and they haven't used this, we can say there's a real liability here. It appears that you're costing yourself and the tollway a lot of money to settle some things that we could have done outside of this process. And let's figure out how to make that happen. Outside of this process being the administrative law process.
Right.
A little friendly encouragement from the people who are handling those cases.
All right. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you. The next slide, just wanted to update you a little bit about the new back office system. We haven't talked about it probably for the last several meetings, but everyone was aware that the board awarded Accenture and SAP the contract for the new back office system. This is a very big deal for the Illinois Tollway and for the tolling industry because it represents one of the first times a tier one product for this sort of thing has been put into place.
Let's talk, what is tier one product? Let's talk a little bit about what that means.
A tier one product would be one that is frequently used by Fortune 500 companies for this sort of service.
Yeah, so as you recall before, what was happening in the tolling industry is electronic tolling was developing and started to be used in different places in the country. You know, in small companies developed that were solely focused on tolling to create, you know, back office solutions, software, basically solutions for collection of electronic tolling. So this is, you know, as we went through a great process with this committee and Chair Reddick was here through that all, if you dare to want to recall. The process that we went through was one that really prioritized finding something that had a broader application because you see innovations coming out of, you know, the credit card industry. They handle customer accounts or this banking industry or these other industries that we couldn't easily incorporate into our toll road only solution. So mm-hmm. Hopefully this will be a little bit more flexible for us.
So we are very excited that we were able to kick this project off toward the end of November, and we've already come a long way. We still have a long way to go, but we've installed all the testing hardware. We're already designing the system in terms of figuring out what the processes would be, what the drop-down menus look like, what the web interface might feel like. Again, many months ahead of us of continued work on this, but the Accenture and SAP teams hit the ground running, and our staff here at the Tollway have, you know, kept pace with them every step of the way. So it's been very positive. We've already started working through the training plan, drafting that, you know, how many groups get trained and kind of what time frame and how does that training roll out. And we've even started to talk about some additional topics that would represent possible innovations. I've listed several of them here. One of them actually has to do with our partnership with the Chicago Lighthouse. they are very interested in using JAWS software, which creates accessibility to computer screens for people who are visually impaired or completely blind. And it's usually just a plug-in software, but it's not something that we could really use today with our system because our current system hasn't kept pace in the way that it's structured and architected to accept that sort of plug-in. But this new system would be able to, and we are working with, through all of our design decisions, we're keeping track in kind of a separate column, is this JAWS compliant, would it be JAWS compliant, et cetera, et cetera, so that at least every chance we have to make a decision that is easy enough to make for accessibility, we're making it. And we had a long meeting with Lighthouse about it. Accenture came and spoke at length with them. They have JAWS experts on their team because they do a lot of federal work that involves JAWS as well. So that was exciting for us. We started talking a little bit about the possibility of being able to do ACH for auto replenishment. We really only do auto replenishment with credit cards right now, or of course, if somebody does manual replenishment, they can send in a check, they can use a gift card, they can pay with cash in person. But people who do the auto replenishment really just use credit cards. And I think that some of our fleets in the past have asked about ACH. ACH is for, I know when I pay my credit card bill, I have my bank account already in my online credit card account. Like American Express has my bank account in there. And then they charge the bank account.
Instead of it coming through as a credit transaction. So many people now, you know, you have your card that acts as a debit card, but it'll have a credit card logo on it. But, you know, there is some sensitivity because the credit card fee that's charged, you know, if you use the debit function and, you know, use your PIN or something at the cash register, there's a different, I think, fee structure for that. So we hadn't previously been able to accept basically the debit function or the direct from bank account function, I should say. So we were always using the credit side of it. So this would, I think, open up the door for direct access to bank accounts. We set that linkage up to avoid that extra cost for us.
Right. And there are other complexities that are operational level complexities that are finance level. So it's not as if this would be for certain, but the possibility of having a system that could even manage it is a big deal. And it would actually open up a new payment avenue and one that would protect people from having their credit cards expire, which is an ongoing challenge for a lot of organizations, or with fleets, their credit cards sometimes get maxed out because they have so many transactions in any given day that their credit cards will shut down because it registers as fraud or whatever on the credit card company side, and then they call us in a panic, oh my gosh, why don't you put this back on, put it back on. So, and then finally, the third one is something that we're working toward because every single day we get at least a few phone calls from people who say, I'm pretty sure I missed some tolls. Here's my license plate number. Can you find them? Right now we really can't. But in the future we might be able to. So we're trying to figure out a way that people might be able to do that. I know the city of Chicago right now allows you to put your license plate in on the website and you can see if you have any outstanding red light violations, parking violations, etc. And they don't give every little bit of detail online because they want to do some privacy protection. But at least if for some reason somebody took the notice off your car or you've lost it or whatever it might be, you can still get to it just using your license plate online. So we might be able to do something closer to that in the future with this type of system.
This is what you call anonymous grace period. What does that mean?
It would be anonymous because we wouldn't have gone to a Secretary of State or a DMV to get their data and find them. They would be able to put their information in and say, I think I missed it. Do you see my license plate anywhere? Oh, you think you see it? Here, let me just pay it.
And the grace period, it refers to the fact that they've contacted or they've done that before the time of the violations or they've taken notice.
I know.
It's not a perfect way of describing it because anonymous grace period tolls could also mean something where people don't have to, other than obviously their license plate number, which we would need, people don't have to otherwise identify themselves at all. They can somehow pay cash, right? Or they can some other way, if for some reason that's important to people. So
we'll keep working on the language.
So this is more, I think it's almost like a self like, it means the license plate lookup, right? For the customer, customer license plate lookup that they can use, which would be, it's something people just can't understand why we can't do now.
I had the same thought.
I think we all kind of did, and that's one of the features.
So you'll have to help us name it.
Something that has to do with vision impaired jaws, we could certainly come up with something.
Shark or something. I like that. Okay.
I don't know if there are any further questions or thoughts, but we wanted to just let everybody know that this is up and running, the implementation is going very well so far, and I've done a lot of kind of big government implementations, and I have to say I think this is moving faster and better here at the beginning than I typically observe, so I'm very happy so far.
I assume there's something more rigorous than that. We are actually benchmarking against dates that we had established
yes.
in the contract. I love your observations, and
yes.
I think it's great to compare to other experiences, but the other experiences were
we
too
have
painful. That gives a kind of a skewed
project plan. We've established milestones. All of the things that you need to make sure that the team is on board.
Well, maybe at some point the chair would like to just review this.
Yeah.
This is just an update. I mean, we
yeah,
do regular
right.
updates on the calendar and how we're keeping pace with
and
that.
I think
so we just thought we would let you know what's going on.
And I think it's important, just given the fact the amount of time and effort that was spent at this committee to start this process as we've gone in, you know, I think the regular implementation updates keep us apprised, it's appreciated, and I'll pass that along to the board, full board, next week on Thursday. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I think that takes us to the settlement guidelines. And as we begin to engage in this, I think that given the nature of the discussion, that it's appropriate that we take this into executive session for these discussions. And provided I'm correct, we could get a motion on that.
Thanks, Chair. It is rather atypical for this committee to need to go into exec, but we are going to be discussing matters that directly impact pending and potentially future litigation settlements thereof, so very appropriate under Section 2C11 of the Illinois Open Meetings Act, which is an exception. So a motion pursuant to that to enter executive session.
Take a motion.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? We will go into executive session then.
It's discussion. Before the camera goes off, I would just note there will not be, even though we have vote, there will not be a vote taken in the executive session other than a recommendation from this committee to bring the matter to the full board. You will not be passing any motion or having anything that goes into effect. So just so we're clear what we're going to do in exec. Thanks.
Thank you. All right.